This is the Noctilucent Cloud display of July 1st to 2nd last year. I'm going to keep my talk short because Peter is on after me, and he says he's got lots to talk about. And if I run into his time, he's going to take away the camera at Athabasca. I started the NLC Can-Am network in 1988. We are an informally associated group of people keen on looking out for the beautiful phenomenon of Noctilucent clouds. Each season, we look forward to sighting NLC, and many of us like to photograph them. This month will mark our 25th season of surveillance. Next slide. This is just a fact sheet with some quick facts and highlights about the network. Slide two. I've got a report form for amateur observers and a separate form for weather stations so that they can do their sky checks more quickly. I also glean sightings from Tom McEwen's NLC Observers homepage, the spaceweather.com website, and people who just email me with their sightings. Most amateurs just do one or two sky checks a night, usually at evening twilight. With the weather stations, some have just written down when they see a display, but many have done hourly sky checks. So in northern areas, that could mean 5 to 6 hourly sky checks per night. Slide three. This is a map showing the locations of our observers since 1988. The black dots are individuals. The open circles. Okay, sure. Black dots are individuals. For example, that cluster down there. Open circles are weather and flight service stations. The open square right around there at the Geographical Center of Alberta is the automated camera administered by Peter Dalin at Athabasca University Geophysical Observatory, or AGO. And also of note is that black dot over there, which is the location of Jay Broche, who I'm going to be mentioning in a couple of minutes. As you can see, there's kind of a cluster of observers in the Edmonton area. There's an active group of local astronomers who keep a watch for NLC. And down in Washington and Oregon, as of around 2007, they started submitting the photographs to spaceweather.com of the one or two big displays that they've seen down there. So that's why you get a big cluster of observers down there. Okay, we'll go to slide four. Now here I've taken the bar graph from the Causes Wiki page showing the United Kingdom-Denmark sightings and added the NLC Can-Am sightings since 1988. So the UK-Denmark is blue and ours are orange. Our totals are higher, especially around there, as they are total sightings, not just moderate sightings. Now, in 1992, you can see there was a similar low activity in that particular year. However, the next solar maximum or minimum?
Maximum,
thank you. In the early part of the last decade, shows still quite a bit of NLC activity, at least with our network. In fact, our best year was 2003 with 54 active nights. Okay, we'll go to slide five.
Could you describe what the ordinate is there?
Oh, sure. X-axis. Our x-axis is year, from 88 all the way till 2011, whereas y-axis is the number of displays, with the highest numbers being just above 50. This map is taken from the July 1994 Sky and Telescope and shows the average sightings of noctilucent clouds in Western North America. The map's a bit dated, but considering most of our weather station participation was in the late 80s and early 90s, it's a fairly accurate map. You could probably add two or three sightings to each of the zones. So the frequency of occurrence is controlled quite a bit by the favorable climate in the northern prairies of Alberta, the northern part of Alberta and Saskatchewan, where the weather is really good over here. You get a lot more tropospheric cloud as you get towards the west coast and also towards Hudson Bay. So that decreases the number of sightings. And of course, the decrease south is due to them being far away from the NLC and north because of more unfavorable sighting conditions due to bright twilight at peak season.
How do you define frequency here?
The number of sightings that were registered by the weather station specifically, the ones that observed every night, like every hour of the night.
This is per season?
Per season, the average per season, yeah. In fact, in the peak area, we're consistently seeing in Edmonton, for example, quite a bit higher now. In the last few years, it's been consistently above 10. Yeah.
10 nights per season.
10 active nights per season, yeah. Now, as you can see, approximately below the 49th parallel, at least in this analysis, you only had about one active night per season. But this whole notion was shattered in starting in 1993, if we can get slide number 6, by this fellow, Jay Broche, from Glen Ullin, North Dakota, which is at a latitude of about 46.8. He started submitting observations in 1993, and he has consistently seen between 3 and 5 active nights per season. So if you recall the previous map, it's no longer one. Down there, it's possible to see like quite a bit more, 3 to 5 per season. Next slide, number 7. This photo was taken by Jay on the morning of June 25th of 2009. The NLC here are less than 2 degrees above the horizon. Due to his southerly location, many of his NLC are very low, and it makes it easy to understand that it does not take much tropospheric cloud to cover an occlusive cloud display. A typical NLC display is low in the sky and occupies an elevation range of only a few degrees. And so it's easily covered by tropospheric cloud. Slide 8. This graph shows frequency of NLC as a percentage on the y-axis versus years starting from 88 and going all the way through 2011. It's using sites, weather stations in a 5-degree latitude range centered at 55 north. Now, to make this graph, only the sky checks made under clear skies were used. The blue curve is data from an entire season, whereas the green curve is data used just at the peak season from about mid-June to mid-July. Unfortunately, the utility of the graph is rather limited unless you've got sites which with very clear skies every year, like for example, from Arizona. If the data were made from Arizona, it would be more useful because you got a little more clear nights in Arizona. But for example, at LaRange at 55 north in northern Saskatchewan, how many clear nights do you think you would get? Let's say out of 100 clear nights, how many are clear out of 100? How many say 50? How many say 40? 30? 20? The average is about 25 out of 100 nights. And if you were to add nights that were kind of clear that you could probably also use, you only get about 1 in 3 nights that are actually usable. So if you're just using clear sky data, you're sampling just a very small portion of the total sample. So you have to take into consideration nights that have varying degrees of tropospheric cloud. Let's go to slide 9. Now, because our weather stations record tropospheric cloud data on their hourly sky checks, we can use these data to implement a detection probability system similar to what the Russian observers did in the 1960s. This is how we did it. We made a number of test cases consisting of 2 sites, one site that saw NLC and another site to the north that was observing at the same time. The tropospheric cloud at that site, plus if it was a positive or negative NLC observation, became a datum point. And then this graph was constructed. So what we got here is the percentage of sky checks that had NLC versus the amount of tropospheric cloud that the test site had on their report form, ranging from 0, which is perfectly clear skies, all the way to 5, which is overcast skies. Now, the green curve is what is the empirical curve. Blue curve is ideal curve. So ideally, under overcast skies, you wouldn't see any NLC. Under perfectly clear skies, you would see NLC all the time. Now, our results showed that from overcast to a tropospheric cloud value of about 1, the empirical curve follows the ideal curve quite well. But then, for some reason, at trace and down to 0, something happens there. And it's a bit of a mystery. If the NLC are there and the skies are clear, why would you not be able to see the NLC? It's as if the NLC only show up if there's already some cloud in the sky. If we want to personify them as kind of a fickle lot, we are NLC and we're not going to show up tonight. Oh, look, there's some other cloud there. We can come out to play. Nonetheless, we use the green values in this graph as the correction coefficients in an equation to estimate the corrected number of NLC visible in a given time period. But we took the 0/5 value and made it 1 arbitrarily. Okay, slide 10. This is photos of the LaRange Flight Service Station, Northern Saskatchewan, latitude 55, and the Prince Albert Flight Service Station at 53.5, directly south of LaRange. The folks at LaRange have been with us since we started in 1988. As of 1990, they have kept the surveillance fires burning with great hourly observations for the entire season. How about a hand for these dedicated individuals? At a latitude of 55 north, they are at a similar latitude as Moscow. Maybe we can go to the next slide, number 11. So this is a comparison of the active nights at LaRange in orange and Moscow in blue from 1990 to 2011. Both sites had low years in 1992 and 1993, but there's no real definitive low at the 10 years later. And the big question is, what happened here? In 2010, LaRange only had 2 active nights. That's worthy of a little more investigation. And Peter is going to explain next why these totals are so high for Moscow. Okay, next slide. Okay, we're going to, slide 12, yes. We're going to take a look at the derived detection probability equation, apply it to 3 different seasons at the LaRange Flight Service Station. We're going to change gears a bit and use actual readings, positive readings on the y-axis as opposed to positive nights. For example, in 1992, which is that really low year, LaRange had a total of 399 sky checks. And on the x-axis, we're looking at 10-night intervals through the entire NLC season. 53 corresponds to the last 10-night interval in May, so, or in that case, it's 11 nights, May 21st to 31st. 61 would be June 1st to 10th, and all the way to our last interval of surveillance, which is August 1st to 10th. Now, the blue curve is what they actually saw. The corrected numbers are the yellow curve. And you can see consistently the numbers differ by a factor of about 2. So instead of, let's say, at this interval, they had 3 readings with NLC. The corrected value is approximately twice as high. And we find that consistently with the corrected curve indicates about twice as many displays as the raw data. I guess generally speaking, you could say that the space in between the two curves gives you an indication in that time period of how cloudy it was tropospherically. So if the curves are close together, it was a clear interval. If they're far apart, you had a lot of tropospheric cloudiness in that particular interval. Now, as a percentage of total sightings, positive readings vary between 2% of total readings for a bad year to about 12% for a good year. More meaning results can be derived when you actually compare years, one year to the next, whereas this is just results of one particular year. So stay tuned. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is the results from 2010. Again, that was that year that was really bad. But we have a big space here, so that suggests that it was very cloudy that year. Okay, next slide, number 14. And this is one of the years that Moscow had really good numbers, whereas L'Orange was about normal. But you've got, in some cases, a magnitude of 3 between the two curves, which suggests, again, lots of tropospheric cloud. Okay, next slide. Now, this is the NLC display of July 4th and 5th last year. Now, in addition to tropospheric clouds, many other factors affect NLC sightings. There's sight factors, such as flatness of the horizon, interference by lighting, humidity, or dust or smoke in the air, and also a host of personal factors, such as length of the sky check, optical aid, fatigue, dark adaption, acuity, motivation, experience, and mobility to dodge clouds. Now, can you remember all those? If you can't, here's a mnemonic. Lazy observers fudge data, although many eventually mature. We must keep in mind that the handful of displays we see each season have a wide range of characters. There are a few monster displays that cover a wide area, but many more smaller ones that are ridiculously low in the sky or are on the very fringes of visibility, but each is still counted as a sighting. Also keep in mind that in most cases, if a person sees NLC at one location, there's a good chance that someone farther south can see the same display, as long as he or she makes the effort to look and knows what he or she is looking at and reports it to someone. To conclude, ground-based visual monitoring of NLC, despite all of its inherent challenges, is important because it provides ground truth for climate models and satellite observations and may still detect large-scale swings in activity over a long time scale. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sure someone's going to ask the question that of whether you have given any thought to determining whether the clouds are moving equatorward over time.
Consistently, there have been, well, let's say starting from about 1990, there have been there's been about one display. One fairly big display that you could see that far south, at least starting in 1993 with Jay Broch. He's like I say, he's recorded a minimum of 3 from his latitude. Now, some of those have been pretty faint displays that he could see only very low on the horizon. But certainly since about 2005, with all these other people reporting in Washington State and that kind of thing, it indicates that there's at least a consistent number of displays that can be seen. I mean, 1 or 2, that kind of thing. It doesn't really seem to be increasing. No.
Okay. Any other questions?
One quick question. Like in you saw a lot of activity in 2011, and then a lot of activity in 2011, and then a big dip in 2010.
Right.
And so how do you take out all the, how do you normalize it for observing ability? I mean, was it more, less observing nights in 2010 than 2011, or?
No, the coverage was pretty consistent. There wasn't a big drop of observers in 2010. What we found, at least with observers in the Edmonton area, a lot of them were complaining that there were hardly any sightings, but at least from my site, looking during the entire night, I still had, I think it was 14 active nights that season. But a lot of those were really faint displays or really low. So I think what what you can say about that particular season was that the activity generally was normal, but the clouds did not go that far south in 2010.
So it was a normal number of observing nights.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I think that's worthy of a little more investigation. There is some papers published about some kind of drastic decrease in the density of the thermosphere in 2009-2010. That might have had some kind of effect. But, for example, in Europe, however, the numbers in 2010 were normal. But in North America, complete drop all the way across the network in brightness of NLC and extent. So they're interesting that there's a big difference between Europe and North America in that, just for that 1 year. And then things picked up again last year. Any other questions? Great, thank you.